My guest is singer Susanna McCorkle, who is one of today's most gifted interpreters of American popular song. You'll be able to hear for yourself in a moment when she performs live in our studio. Jazz critic Leonard Feather named Susanna McCorkle Singer of the Year last December and wrote that her tone, phrasing, and sensitivity match her taste in songs. Stereo Review gave one of her recent albums a Record of the Year award. Her recordings have paid tribute to songwriters like Harry Warren, Johnny Mercer, Yip Harburg, and Leo Robin, and have also featured songs by contemporaries like Dave Frischberg and Rupert Holmes. Her new album is called Dream. Susanna McCorkle is also a short story writer who has received an O. Henry Award and has been published in several magazines, and she's a translator and interpreter of four languages. Playing with her today is Ben Aronov on piano and Chip Jackson on bass. I want to welcome all of you to Fresh Air. And Susanna, before we talk about your music, would you sing a couple of songs for us?
I'd love to. The first one I want to do is my little tribute to Fred Astaire, a wonderful singer people think of as a dancer, but all those of us in music treasure his records, and songwriters loved writing for him because he was just a guy singing. He didn't impose himself on the song. He really gave a lot of attention to the lyrics and the music. So, this is for Fred.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on the Ritz. Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coat, perfect fits. Putting on the Ritz. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper. Trying hard to look like Gary Cooper. Super duper. Come, let's go where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their mitts. Putting on the Ritz. If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on the Ritz. Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coat, perfect fits. Putting on the Ritz. That's where each and every Lulu Bell goes. Every Thursday evening with her swell bows. Rubbing elbows, come let's go and we'll attend a jubilee and we can spend our last two bits.
One of my favorite lyricists is Yip Harburg, who tried to put his humanist politics into his songs and the shows that he wrote for. And I had the pleasure of meeting him when I was making a tribute album to him. I found out he lived right around the corner from me in Manhattan. I was terrified of meeting him. I'm always scared of meeting all the songwriters. And he was a bit forbidding because he was really worried that nobody young would understand his songs and what they were about and if they were supposed to be funny. But once he saw that I really knew a lot about his songs and extra lyrics and obscure songs, he opened right up. He was really wonderful and showed me a lot of unusual music. He did his own show toward the end of his life, and he always used to sing If I Only Had a Brain from The Wizard of Oz. I took another verse from The Wizard, from that same song that was sung by the Cowardly Lion and the Tin Woodsman and the Scarecrow, If I Only Had a Heart, and I was fascinated when he said that when he and Harold Arlen wrote the score for Over the Rainbow, they really tried not to talk down to children. They did adult songs. They didn't think of kiddie songs. And maybe that's why the songs have lasted so well, because this one seems really almost a song with an 80s sensibility. It seems to me that it could be a song about just being in touch with your feelings.
She should be on her mettle, and yet I'm torn apart. Just because I'm presuming that I could be kinda human if I only had a heart. I'd be tender, I'd be gentle, and awful sentimental regarding love and art. I'd be friends with the sparrows and the boy that shoots the arrows if I only had a heart. Picture me, a balcony above. Voice sings low. Wherefore art thou, Romeo? I hear a beat. How sweet, just to register emotion, jealousy, devotion, and really feel the part. I would stay young and chipper, and I'd lock it with a zipper if I only had a heart. If I only had a
That's beautiful. Susanna, you have just a magnificent voice. And I'd like to take a few minutes.
Actually, so do you, Terry.
Let's take out a few minutes to talk before you sing some more songs. And, you know, I've been listening to your records for years, but I know very little about you, so I really want to find out some more. When did you start singing popular songs?
Well, I grew up always really loving songs. I used to listen to them on the radio, and my mother had a lot of Broadway show albums in the days when the music was just sensational, of My Fair Lady and West Side Story and things, mid-50s and earlier South Pacific and Finian's Rainbow. So I always was fascinated by the stories in songs. I used to lie on the floor listening to them and figuring out who was singing them, why they were unhappy or what or happy. And I went through the 60s, like everybody, trashing all that and thinking it was stupid and establishment and boring. And it wasn't really until I went to Europe as a disenchanted youth in the mid-60s and late 60s that I rediscovered, or really discovered for the first time, the richness of American popular culture, especially of the 30s and 40s. In movies, movie musicals like Fred and Ginger, Busby Berkeley, and dramatic movies like Double Indemnity and Sunset Boulevard. That was all new to me. And also old jazz records from the 30s, Duke Ellington and earlier Billie Holiday with the small group records of the 30s, and earlier Bessie Smith. And I became really fascinated by them and thought that there was a whole country that I hadn't known about growing up, and it must still be there, at least in vestiges. And I just really wanted to get with people who appreciated those things.
What happened in Europe to show you this kind of music that you had ignored during a period in America?
Well, it was the music of the intelligentsia there, really. It was the snob appeal at first, because I spent time with students and artists around my age, and they really knew so much about Charlie Parker, you know, jazz, and Bessie Smith and Billie Holiday. And the records were readily available, even in the chain drugstores and supermarkets there. You could buy a Billie Holiday record for the equivalent of $2, and it was just more readily available. And that really got me interested. But I really only had to hear a Billie Holiday record once to know that she was something very special, and it was a tradition of singing that I felt deserved to be kept alive, very direct and honest, instead of either stagey and theatrical or folk music, which had a kind of innocence and guilelessness, but it wasn't really musically very sophisticated, or the Supremes, top 40 stuff. It just seemed a whole other way of singing and approaching music that I just loved. I was really ready to hear it, and it hit me like lightning.
After singing those kinds of songs in Europe, when you came back and when you were reunited with friends and family? Were they really surprised at this new kind of material that you were doing?
Well, there wasn't really anybody to be reunited with. You know, I didn't have any friends from college, and I was living on the other side of the country from my parents. I just felt as if...
You changed your life then.
I did. I felt as if I didn't belong to anything. And then when I discovered jazz, I felt I belonged to jazz. It was like a tribe. And I was one of the strays who finally found my home tribe. And it always, at first I lived in England. And I lived in London for a while. And I immediately felt that way. I had a shared sense of humor. And there were other things, different books that we liked, politics, movies, even foods. I felt, boy, these are my kind of people. And they were always here, but I just didn't know about them. And I still really feel that way, as if I'm a daughter of the tribe who has to pay my dues and go through certain things to be considered worthy of belonging to this tradition, you know. And I do love that feeling. I think Americans, at least WASPs like me, have a certain rootlessness. And that's, I found that popular music was my root, something good I could belong to and carry on.
I want to find out more about your singing and about how you started to sing, but why don't we save that for a little later in the program? Let me ask you to do another song, and I'll reintroduce you first. My guest is singer Susanna McCorkle. She's performing live for us today, and with her is Ben Aronoff on piano and Chip Jackson on bass.
We're going to do a famous George and Ira Gershwin stand-up. It's wonderful. It's marvelous, you should care for me. It's awful nice, it's paradise, it's what I long to see. You've made my life so glamorous, don't blame me for being amorous. Oh, it's wonderful, it's marvelous, that you should care for me. It's magnifique, it's what I seek, that you should care for me. It's elegant, it's what I want, it's what I long to see. My dear, it's four-leaf clover time, from now on my heart's working overtime. Oh, it's wonderful, it's marvelous, that you should care for me, that you should care for me.
We're featuring a live concert today with singer Susanna McCorkle, Ben Aronoff on piano, Chip Jackson on bass. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with more performance and some more conversation with Susanna McCorkle. This is Fresh Air. We have a concert today with singer Susanna McCorkle, pianist Ben Aronoff, and bassist Chip Jackson. Let me tell you a little bit about the pianist and bassist. Ben Aronoff has performed with Benny Goodman and the late Zoot Sims, and Chip Jackson plays with Tony Bennett, Liza Minnelli. He's recorded with Chuck Mangione. And Susanna McCorkle records now on the Pausa record label. Her new album is called Dream. Susanna, we'll talk some more in a few minutes. I'd really love for you to do another song first.
Okay, well, I know you have a very arty program with lots of literary figures, so I'd like to do a song that would never have been written if it hadn't been for one of the great literary figures, George Bernard Shaw. I'm sure even he would have approved of the way Lerner and Lowe interpreted one of his plays. I've grown accustomed to his face. He almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune. He whistles night and noon. His joy, his woes, his highs, his lows are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in, I was serenely in
could always be that way again. Yet I've grown accustomed to his looks, accustomed to his voice, accustomed to his face. I'm very glad he's just a man, and so easy to forget, rather like a habit I could always break. And yet I've grown accustomed to that trace of something in the air, accustomed to his face.
Singer Susanna McCorkle, your singing and your phrasing are really both magnificent. Do you have any formal training or anything?
I don't have any. I just always grew up singing in school choirs, which I think was great, to always just be confident about opening your mouth and singing. And we used to sing in the car a lot. We used to sing rounds. But the one time I tried, I was living in Rome, and I thought I should learn about breathing and scales. And so I had a friend who studied classical singing, and I went to the teacher who taught her, who was named Maestro Ricci, and he had pictures of Anna Moffo kissing him, Joan Sutherland kissing him. I knew he was the wrong one, but he insisted that he could teach me, and he told me wear a surgical corset and hold, you know, it's whack my jaw, ma c'è la morbida, you know, he says keep your jaw relaxed, and I was so intimidated I couldn't even say I didn't really want to sing opera. And finally, after a few lessons, he said, I'm so sorry, really, you're a well-educated young lady, you speak good Italian, but you will never be a singer. You have a tiny, tiny thread of a voice. I'm so sorry to be the one to tell you this. And I was really so relieved. You know, I said, well, really, I didn't want to sing opera. I wanted to sing, you know, Gershwin. I tried to think of composers he'd identify, and he said, for this, you have enough of a voice already. You know, so that was really my only brush with vocal training. And I always do scales every day. I do 3 octaves of chromatic scales. And I try to keep in good shape, exercising, breathing. But as a jazz musician told me later in London, you know, if you just let go and make people feel song, nobody's going to worry about whether you read music or breathe right, you know. And many people have even said, how good you didn't train, because I think there's so much emphasis on training that people tend to sound just alike. So, and my favorite singers just have a natural rough-edged sound. So even though sometimes I envy virtuosi who just have huge voices, I do notice sometimes you tune out of a voice like that. You just stop listening to the content in a way you would never do with Nat Cole or Billie Holiday or Ray Charles or somebody who's just more unique and kind of rough.
Well, your phrasing is also very personal. It also seems to come from your heart.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I never consciously think of phrasing. I think of lyrics and the person I am singing the song, and just try to feel the song and not be too intellectual about it.
So you had this short-lived period of taking lessons, which was a disaster. But you liked to sing. You sang in the chorus. When did you actually start singing, or think that you would be a professional singer?
Well, I did some summer stock in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. They had shows, Bye Bye Birdie and Lil Abner, and I sang in those, and I liked singing, but I didn't like doing the same thing the same way every night. So for a while, I just didn't sing at all. I thought it had just been a school kid thing, and I was in a choral group at the University of California, but I hated it. It was 99 girls singing hymns and Rodgers and Hammerstein melodies. I said, what is this? So I just stopped singing. I didn't even have record player or anything. It was really Billie Holiday, I have to say. Billie Holiday made me want to be a singer.
So when you went to Europe, as you told us you did earlier, you didn't know you wanted to sing then?
No, I went as a writer. I'd already published a couple stories, and my parents had agreed they would give me just barely enough money to live on for a year and try to write. So that's why I was there.
As someone who would give anything to sing like you do, I can't imagine having such a voice and not thinking that you'd sing all the time.
Well, thank you. I guess I was pretty much an introverted person and solitary, and it is very hard. It's not hard for me anymore, but the thought of being yourself on stage and not hiding behind a role was very daunting, and I wasn't very good at it for a long time. You know, I used to stare down at my feet while I sang in London and everything, and now it's the only way I know how to be. But I think in a lot of ways my personality type, I felt, wasn't suited to be a performer. I thought you had to be an extrovert. I don't think that's true anymore, but that's why I didn't really ever consider it.
Did you ever fear when you started gravitating toward popular song and toward some of the classic composers that maybe you'd missed your time?
I've always felt really glad to live in the time I lived in, because I was in a very interesting political time at Berkeley and a very good time for women. I guess I would have been a starlet band singer if I'd been in the 40s, but I wouldn't get to be the woman that I am now, more independent, traveling and living alone in Europe. So I feel really good about it. I feel people said I was crazy to do that kind of music when I started in the early 70s, but that now people are ready to hear that. So I feel that I'm lucky that those records called out to me that way, and I wanted to heed the call.
And there isn't pressure now on women singers to be sex kittens or coy when they're on stage.
No, I think it's very different now. Communication is the thing, and just the way serious relationships are the thing. And I'm really glad to be singing now. I think I have a better chance to communicate and be a woman of the 80s, paying tribute and having learned from the past.
Could you do another song for us?
Well, sure. This is one of my favorites. I discovered it on a tape. People are always sending me these wonderful cassettes. This was of Johnny Mercer singing his own version of Hit the Road to Dreamland, a song he wrote in 1943 for a movie called Star Spangled Rhythm that featured Mary Martin and the Golden Gate Quartet. And it has not only the song he wrote with Harold Arlen, but also the patter section he wrote for the Golden Gate Quartet, who are dressed as porters, and was telling Mary Martin and her boyfriend they would have to get out of the club car of the railroad train.
Bye-bye, baby, time to hit the road to dreamland. Bye-bye, baby, I'll dig you in the land of none. Baby, we'll be swinging high in dreamland all night, baby, where little cherubs trod. Look at that knocked out moon, been a blowing his top in the blue. Never saw the likes of you. What an angel. Bye bye, baby. Time to hit the road to dreamland. Don't cry, baby. It was divine, but the rooster has finally crowed. Time to hit the road. Now, pardon me, ma'am, and pardon me, sir. This is not a job that we prefer, but it's strictly a railroad regulation that we close this car before we reach the station. So if you'll forgive my effrontery, I will be as brief as I can be. Yes, yes, good children, it's getting time to hit the road. With everything electric and mechanized, if you do get nervous, I ain't surprised. But you know, good people, you can't cure ills with capsule tablets or vitamin pills. The only thing to rest your head is a good night's sleep in a quilted bed. So just resolve to be good and firm, because the early bird is gonna catch the worm. Yes, yes, good children, it's getting time to hit the road. Now see that moon shining way up there. His chops is all beaten, he ain't nowhere. He's dying to get him some shut-eye too, but he's got to stay up and light the way for you. So be good children and treat him right, and he'll shine like a lantern tomorrow night. Now it's 2:30, and that ain't no crime. I trust you've had a most enjoyable time. I surely do thank you for your friendly call, but we're forced by law to say goodnight all. Bye-bye, baby, hit the road to dreamland. Don't cry, baby, it was divine, but the rooster has finally crowed. Time to hit the road, time to hit the road. Time to hit the road. Time to hit the road.
That was really great. You know, I've wanted for so many years to hear you perform. It's really just a pleasure to have this concert
today.
Oh,
we love being on this show. Thank you
all for doing it. Susanna, what are your plans for the future?
Well, I'm going to be doing some summer festival concerts in Cooperstown, New York, and Rome, and the Southern Vermont Arts Festival. And then I'll be appearing in New York and probably around the country in the fall.
Tell us about the songs you do on your new album.
I've done a mixture of standards and some unusual songs. The standards are Dream with Harold Arlen, Johnny Mercer, with a verse, and All of Me, Vocalese version, I Get a Kick Out of You, At Long Last Love, Just for a Thrill. Then a Libra Staller song. Called Longings for a Simpler Time, a bossa nova, Tristi. I love doing a mixture of old and new songs, all kinds of things, and features Frank West, and Ben Aronoff is on it.
Okay, well, it's been really an extraordinary pleasure to hear you perform. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you
for coming.
Terry.
And thanks to the musicians, Ben Aronoff on piano, Chip Jackson on bass, and Susanna McCorkle, who sang for us this afternoon. And thank you all so much for performing. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.